Carrie, you're keeping all of that in, okay?
We just started recording right now.
Okay.
Oh, yucky. Mike's the one doing the editing on this, so if he wants to keep it in, it's up to him.
Well, you know who didn't keep it in?
Hot Dogs.
On X-Men The Dark Phoenix here on Cape Chronicles, episode number 85. She sure could keep it in, and we're not going to either. We are recording this on August 14th, 2022, and I just realized that statement could be taken in multiple different
ways.
Yeah,
I was confused about
that. So wrong. And
HR.
Do we need to have a chat with HR now?
No, he'll be all right. But we are talking about X-Men The Dark Phoenix. And I am Mike, and I am not all here tonight, but I do have three people.
Couldn't tell at all.
I have the one, the only, the immaculate, Fred. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, my friend. I am, okay, my life has not been as tumultuous as yours in the last couple of weeks, but I am with you.
Awesome. And there she is, the one that holds everything together, the one and only, Carrie. How's it going?
Hey. Not bad. Things are starting to die down at work, so I have like a week or week and a half before things get insane again, and I'm going to Vegas in 2 weeks, so yay!
Nice. Blowing all that money.
No, not blowing any money, just, you know, going to a couple wild parties and then coming home.
What a party animal.
Awesome. Yeah, it's weird.
Oh, yeah. And, we have Andrew, too. Show announcements, though.
Hey.
Wow.
Hi, yeah, Andrea.
I'll hold him down. You do whatever it is you need to do.
We'll drown him.
Okay.
How are you, my friend?
I am good. I am doing a lot of math. There's, like, Sokotoa. There's Slope. Do you not remember Sokotoa?
No.
Trigonometry?
I never took trig.
That's grade 10 stuff.
I had to take Algebra 2 three times, okay? Algebra 1 three times in my life. I'm not taking math again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, once I got into calculus, I forgot most of the trig because calculus is easier.
Yeah, no, I'm teaching grade 10. Then Foundations of Mathematics 11 and 12. So
wow.
I've been doing quite a lot of mathing this month.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about math here in a second when we talk about this episode or this movie. Because there were some subtractions of some people in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And But we'll get into all that here in just a second. But, hey, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Cape Chronicles. And we are going to be talking about X-Men, the Dark Phoenix. This one was from June 7th, 2019. This is the one that was released under much scrutiny as to why they should release it. It was, and we all have thoughts on it. So I'm anxious in seeing the thoughts. On it. Before we do that, Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about what this movie is about?
All right. So, the X-Men Protectors of Peace. Jean Grey is one of the most beloved X-Men, but when a mission goes wrong, Jean is exposed to a dark and ancient power. This power has destroyed everything it comes into contact with until her. Now that this power is becoming unstable, she releases it with destruction and anger. Now that this foreign power is consuming her and the world is threatened, the X-Men have to face an important truth. They must save either the world or their friend who threatens it.
Okay, I have a question, and I know we just started into the episode, but I have a question, okay?
Yeah.
Is this how it always happens in the comics? Is this written differently for the movie?
I haven't actually read the comics, but if the X-Men animated series is anything to go by, it's kind of similar. I mean, and to be fair, I think Jean has died like 14, 15 times in the comics.
Way too many times.
I think Jean Grey holds the record of how in the comics of how many times she's been killed. It's like, stop killing Jean Grey, guys.
I was just confused because, like, I know, like, for example, the other X-Men we watched, when Jean came back, she had died, or the Phoenix was in her all along, and it wasn't like a cosmic energy like it was in this movie. That's why I was curious as to which version the comics tends to go and follow after.
The comic storyline that she gets gets into contact with what they call the Phoenix Force. It's not the Dark Phoenix Force, it's just the after, you know, she becomes Phoenix and then stuff happens and then the energy kind of morphs into this dark version of the Phoenix, and that's when she becomes Dark Phoenix. So yeah.
Okay. I just thought I was watching a Fantastic Four movie at the moment.
A little bit. That beginning,
you wouldn't be wrong. I haven't actually read the comics, but according to friends of mine who have, in the comics, it's Mr. Fantastic who finds Jean after she gets bombarded with the Phoenix Force. So.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Fred, how did this...
There was a bit of a missed opportunity there to get the X-Men, the Fantastic Four involved. Both times that we had a Phoenix storyline. Anyway, Fred...
How to do it at the box office, man.
All right, let's run through the box office. So the distributor was 20th Century Fox, and if I'm not mistaken, this is the last movie they release.
Mm-hmm.
Second to last was technically, we have still have New Mutants.
Fair.
But Disney had acquired New Mutants before Fox released it.
True.
So this was the last one that Fox owned and was their own entity before being sucked up.
Okay.
All right, well, the runtime was 1 hour, 53 minutes. It was rated PG-13. Release date was June 7th, 2019. Budget was $200 million. Opening weekend was $32.8 million.
Ouch.
Yeah. But worldwide gross, they made a little bit up, a total of $252.5 million. Hmm. Rotten Tomatoes score, the critics gave it a 22%. Audience was much better at 64%.
A big gap.
It is a big gap.
Well, critics have always been hard on superhero movies, so.
And sci-fi movies, and some adaptations, and yeah, I don't pay attention to critics a lot. Sometimes, most of the time.
I don't either. Did you see that Thor: Love and Thunder is going down in ratings too?
We haven't seen it yet.
I am. Okay, I'm not going to give you my opinion then, but I'm not surprised.
It's at 65% right now from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
It's one of the lower ones from Marvel. But anyways, the cast and crew, just Simon Kinberg was the director. The 355 and one episode of the 2019 Twilight Zone are his only directing credits. He is a writer, though, on Rebels, Invasion, and XXX State of the Union.
I put that one in there for you, Mike.
That movie's mad funny. It's so stupid it's funny. The actors, of course, James McAvoy comes back, Michael Fassbender, Jennifer Lawrence, Nicholas Holt, Evan Peters, Sophie Turner, Ty Sheridan, Cody Smith-McPhee, and Alexandra Shipp. New cast, Jessica Chastain as Vuk, which was she also played Lucille Sharp in Crimson Peak. Brian D.R.C. James as the U.S. President, Jamie Brennan in the kitchen, Halston Sage as Dazzler, Lieutenant Alara Kitten on the Orville. I knew she looked familiar. Lamar Johnson as Match, West on The Next Step, and Otto Asando as Jones or Vernon Elliott on Altered Carbon, which I have not seen. The composer was Hans Zimmer, which dude wrote a ton of scores. Gladiator, number one, Dune, Top Gun, Maverick, haven't seen yet. I really need to see it. And Batman v Superman. He also wrote for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yep.
Don't want to leave that one out. The series there. So
I had to pick and choose, man.
I know. Pick. You don't have to. Well, don't worry about putting Dune next time. Pick something else that people like.
I love Dune.
Oh, here we go. Some behind the scenes then. Tell us a little bit about what happened behind the scenes, Carrie.
Okay, so as Mike mentioned, talking about Dazzler, the mutant singing at the mutant skull party is Allison Blair, aka Dazzler, portrayed by Halston Sage. She is a mutant from the comics who can change sound into light, a talent she used to further her pop singer career. This was the character's cinematic debut.
Can I insert something here?
Yeah.
That's got to be the stupidest mutant power I've ever seen in my life.
Hey,
it's like, have you guys seen The Boys? Like Starlight? Like,
yeah.
Well, she sings and it turns into light. That changes. That's why I'm like, okay.
Hey, you know what? If it brings people joy, it's gonna be cool.
Just had to put that out there. I'm in a mood tonight, so I'm gonna probably lay Fine. On it.
Fine. Great. Fine. So she's like Justin Timberlake. And he's bringing sexy back.
Oh God!
Wow. Yeah. Okay. anyway, as I mentioned, this is the first live action appearance of Dazzler. Bo Derek was set to play her in a film based on the character back in the 1980s, with Gary Goddard writing the film and John Derek directing. And Canadian country singer Beverly Mahode was rumored to appear as her in X-Men: The Last Stand. In a cameo, while Bryan Singer wanted Sigourney Weaver for the role. Singer did an April Fool's prank that the singer and songwriter Lady Gaga was going to be cast as Dazzler in Days of Future Past. A scene from X-Men Apocalypse was shot where Dazzler is seen in a recording studio that Scott Summers and Jean Grey purchased the music in the store for the album, but that was cut. And Sophie Turner hinted that Taylor Swift had been cast in a role for Apocalypse.
T Swift.
Huh. Yep. The film's budget was set to be much smaller than the previous film due to the box office underperformance of X-Men Apocalypse. Executives even went as far as to initially plan to release the film directly to home video and streaming. The film was ultimately released in theaters and lost the studio almost $120 million as the second lowest grossing X-Men film of all time, only beaten out by New Mutants in 2020, which was released during COVID. The film takes place in 1992, the year the X-Men comics were relaunched with the new character design, the new uniforms, and when the show X-Men, the animated series, was released. The film was meant to be the start of a new series of X-Men films that would star the younger cast, Jean Grey, Cyclops, Nightcrawler, Storm, Mystique, Beast, Quicksilver, Jubilee, Dazzler, etc., following their introduction in the past few films, but the critical and financial failure of the film, along with the merger, the Disney merger, meant that those plans were forcefully abandoned.
Yep.
This is the first X-Men movie to not feature Wolverine in any capacity due to Hugh Jackman having retired from the role.
Now I know why it failed.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have his shirt off in the movie. That's why it failed. No, it's not that he retired. It's that he looked at the script and he's like, nah, son, I'm staying retired for this mess.
To be honest.
Hey.
Money
speaks. It's not all about Wolverine. Sophie Turner studied mental illnesses in preparation to play Dark Phoenix. Daniel Cudmore, who previously portrayed Colossus in the franchise, was announced to have a role but did not appear. He was instead played by a stunt performer. Colossus was. The film's infamous "This is for you" or whoever was making X-Men comments.
That was
you, Fred. The film's infamous X-Woman line uttered by Mystique was rather controversial with fans and critics, especially when the scene in question was used in the promotional teaser. It was seen as a condescending attempt to reference feminism and the Me Too movement. Ironically enough, in Deadpool 2, the title character makes a tongue-in-cheek joke about how the name X-Men is supposedly sexist. Chris Claremont, who wrote the original Dark Phoenix story arc, in the comics felt that this adaptation told an effective story, but did not fully capture the impact of the original. And he can be seen sitting in the crowd when Charles Xavier is receiving the award from the president.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. The Dabari, which is the only way I knew which alien race this was. I could have sworn this was the Shi'ar. The Dabari in the movie claimed that their world was destroyed by the same force that turned Jean Grey into the Dark Phoenix. They tried to recruit her in hope of using her power to create new worlds. In the comics, the Dabari are seeking revenge against Jean because she destroyed their home planet while being possessed by the Phoenix. Also, their leader, Volk, is male in the comics.
I'm not going to lie. At first, I thought they said Chitauri earlier in the movie. Yeah. I'm like, come on now. Yeah. Streams a little bit.
This film and the New Mutants were supposedly supposed to merge in a future crossover that adapts the Inferno Saga from the comics. However, with the acquisition of Fox by Disney, such plans were forcibly canceled, and as a result, several scenes from both films had to be reshot or deleted during their reshoots. That's why there's no set for possible sequels. And then casting the role of Volk was first offered to Angelina Jolie, who passed on it before Jessica Chastain accepted it. Jolie passed on the role because she was more interested in playing the character in The Bride of Frankenstein for the Universal monster movie universe, which has been put on hold.
Let's be honest. She knew she could make more money doing something else in that role.
Well, I mean, she became Maleficent, and then she became Thena, so it's fine. She eventually got into the MCU, so yay.
She did, on a movie that doesn't matter. All right.
Hey!
I'm just calling it out tonight. I'm done. I'm calling everybody out tonight. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk a little bit about this film then. What were y'all's overall thoughts on this movie? Before I give my thoughts, what are y'all's thoughts?
I'll start. I think that my biggest issue with this movie was the writing. Okay. I thought that there was a lot of parts that were truly cheesy. They just didn't feel natural. We talked about it prior to recording. There was not a lot of depth in the story. It was very linear. They could have developed Jean a little bit more than just a superficial anger. When she goes and talks to Magneto, it would have been such a perfect time for her to become vulnerable and just say I killed a friend, and there would have been a moment that they would share, because he has suffered loss, he understands grief, so being able to have that raw moment between each other and then potentially finding out that it was Mystique and then she has to run off because she can't rely on him anymore, I would have rather that. Then her just completely burning every single bridge that she had. The whole entire thing that Carrie had mentioned with the quote, it seems to me like every single time somebody's in trouble, women are the ones saving the men. Instead of calling it the X-Men, we should call it the X-Women. Like, as a woman, I hated that line. Like, it almost felt like the director and the writer did not know how to write for women. And it was just like a hurrah, you got your moment, women. This is what you're getting. And it just felt so
forced.
Forced, yes. And that's what I don't like about it.
Well, okay. So a couple of things. So the army showed up before Jean could get out what she was trying to get out to Magneto. So that I think if the military had not shown up on Magneto's island, she wouldn't have eventually have gotten to the point.
And but I would have preferred
she was,
that. like, but there was no need for the military to be there. They had exactly. so many other action moments that, like, one second of vulnerability would have been just so beautiful.
There was no need for the military to be there except to prove Raven's point that the X-Men were basically, and mutants in general, were basically this close from, you know, touching off something that would, you know, have them go back to being the public enemy number one. Mm-hmm. So there was that. And this other thing, I get that the line about X-Women was cheesy, but Raven wasn't wrong. I mean,
she wasn't wrong, but it's not a Raven line. It yeah. is a writer's line. Like, this is supposed to be a strong woman, and that just came up. Like, I felt bad for Jennifer Lawrence to have to say those words. If I was her, I'd be like, seriously? Because that's exactly what I said when I was sitting on the couch. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, well, this is what we've stooped down to?
Okay, I get that the line was cheesy. It probably could have been written better, but at the same time, she's calling Charles out on his BS,
mm-hmm.
and out on his ego trip, and that's how she maybe could have phrased it better. But I mean, like I said, she's not wrong. The women have been saving the men in the franchise the last couple of movies. So
is it that they have? I understand they saved them, but is it because their powers were more needful in those moments than the ones that the guys had, though, too? So I understand. So I understand where both y'all are coming from, but it felt, even though, yeah, it may have been the women doing a lot of the saving, their powers were necessary over what the guys needed in those moments, or the powers the guys had. Like, when you...
But I think that those lines would have been perfect if, like, the X-Men were, like, sitting around and, like, just having some beers, having some drinks, right. eating, and then, like, the girls are, like, throwing jabs at each other with the guys, like, and then somebody says that, I would have, like, laughed at that. But because it's such a important moment where you see Charles just being a complete a-hole to his crew, I didn't say the bad word.
I didn't have to beep you this time.
I know. Like, he straight up told Mystique that he did not care how many X-Men were sacrificed for the better of the world. And that's disgusting. So for her to say that line that felt so, like, it just felt like that particular line could have been used somewhere else, and she could have said something more impactful at that moment.
That's fair enough.
So I'm going to agree kind of with both parties on this. I'm going to explain how I may know this.
God forbid you're not on my side. I'm just kidding.
No, I was going to agree with you on the writing. I do think the writing was very soft in this movie. I don't think it's as strong as it probably could have been, especially for a movie that they would potentially realize that, because even if Disney acquired Fox, there was workings in this for a few years before Disney acquired them. Like, there's not just going to be, oh, 2 months before Disney gets them, they're going to acquire them. Oh, they're going to buy us. No, there was definitely some rumors and probably rumblings before. So knowing that this could have been their last bang out, they probably could have done better with the writing. To me, the movie was not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It was average. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was watching an average action flick. I felt like I wasn't watching a superhero movie. I wasn't watching something that belonged in a series. I just felt like I was watching a one-off action flick. And it was okay. Would I watch it again? Probably not. Not that it's bad. But it's not like utter garbage, vomit all over the place, terrible, as I heard people talk about.
Yeah, I don't understand why I'm supposed to hate this movie. But it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad, but it had some issues that made me probably not want to watch this movie again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it was like what Andrea said, the writing, some stuff felt very forced. It's like they feel like they had to get through with everything because they knew they were coming to an end and they needed to bump it out. Like, I think the Dabari was not fleshed out enough.
I would have loved to see a lot more of them. I agree.
I think this, because when Jean is fighting the Phoenix and she's fighting the X-Men and she's having this issue, all of a sudden they insert aliens here. Boom. It's almost like that's how it felt in the movie. Oh, we need an alien too. Listen. So it almost felt like they could have taken this movie. They had enough in this story to develop a 2-part movie.
Oh, they did. They totally did.
And flesh this movie out instead of try to shove everything in less than 2 hours.
And that's a big problem. Like, it felt like they were jumping from thing to thing. And I think that if we remember, they wanted to do more films or more shows that revolved around the younger mutants. And I saw that in the moment where they're having like the party in the back with the girls singing and stuff like that. I felt that moment could have been perfect in another movie, but they were just trying to throw so many things that it didn't feel like it was a movie with the right path. It just felt like there was a lot of branching that they were doing. And they missed out on a lot of good opportunities to dive deeper into a lot of what was going on and the feelings and so forth.
Well, yeah. I think, I mean, you're not wrong. You can kind of see where, you know, they had to, you know, do some serious reworking when it became obvious that, you know, the New Mutants and, you know, the younger mutants were not going to cross over and continue into new movies and stuff like that. I was confused by which aliens they picked for the movie, because it's usually there in the comics and in the in like the animated series, it's usually the Shi'ar that get in contact with the X-Men when the Phoenix shows up. And I was not familiar with the Dabari, so I was like, and then why were the Dabari trying to kill everyone and stuff? So yeah, but I get the whole vengeance thing. That was interesting. I thought Jessica Chastain was going to be playing Leandra, who's the head of the Shi'ar.
Yeah, I think they missed an opportunity to have like William Stryker, you know, the big
again.
But I think the big thing, if it was like military, I think William Stryker would have been a missed opportunity since they didn't have him. Fred.
Yes, sir.
Man, you've been awfully quiet. What did you think of the movie?
I've appreciated what everybody's been saying, and these are a lot of the same criticisms that I have. I thought the movie was very linear. There wasn't any real major surprises. Sure, they threw a couple surprising deaths at us, probably because they were just wanted to die from boredom. The aliens showing up was... They should have fleshed that out a lot more. I'm not going to dwell on this. We just talked about it a lot. No, I appreciate that. But one of the other things that really bothered me is they go into space and they save the astronauts. And what does it feel like? 2 days later, the entire world has turned their back on them because, you know, Jean had a bad day.
Well, that was making Raven's points. Like Charles was working so hard to make the X-Men look like the good guys, and it just takes this one incident to completely reverse course for all of the, you know, normal people in the
It reminds in the world. Me of cancel culture.
I don't think they would turn their back on the X-Men so quickly. Yeah, they might get in trouble, and yeah, they might want to persecute Jean for what she was doing, but I don't think the U.S. government would say, no, because she did that, we're now going to hunt and intern every mutant that we deem evil.
You don't think that would happen?
It depends from the start of the movie. They have that much trust to lean on them. They have the X phone from the president's office to Xavier's office, so they have a certain level of trust that they're, you know, portraying to the audience. And for them to turn their back on them so quickly, I just don't see that being realistic.
Is it a certain level of trust, or is it a certain level of expectation on the government's part?
I think it's trust, though, too, because they never would have had that phone installed if they didn't trust them to begin with.
Yeah.
And do you really want to turn your back on somebody that's super powerful?
I just think that they turned on them, like, really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. So,
what I'm trying to get at is they didn't show causation, like an ongoing reason for us to have that distrust between the government and the X-Men. Sure, like, in the older movies, I get it, but in this timeline, they've built that trust over the last several.
They didn't show that, but and again, this is going back to Charles's ego trip and stuff like that. But in part, you know, at least Charles's reason is he doesn't feel like he can say no. And because he doesn't feel like I think there's again, there's this expectation that they are going to be able to go in and save the day all the time. And what if the X-Jet hadn't been space worthy?
So what I really see happening, if this was going to be reality, and I laugh because, you know, it's X-Men, but yeah. They would have militarized the branch of the X-Men, and there would have been a military liaison.
Well, that would have been what X-Force would be.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, create the X-Force team and get Forge in there, which I think was supposed to be on the list at some point.
I think Frey can kind of probably agree with this. I think that instead of cutting ties with them so quickly and so fast and hard, maybe what should have happened is the president should have contacted Charles and said, hey, what's going on with your girl? You know, in a way, what's going on? Is she running with Magneto? Is she, you know, what's going on? And he could have said, hey, listen, we don't know. She went to space. She saved the astronauts. Something's going on, man. We are dealing with it. Give us a chance to deal with it. But again, like any other person, when you don't understand what's going on, people jump the gun and freak out. And make decisions based in fear.
This basically happened because of something the government kind of expected of them. So
they blame the government.
It gets into this weird political thing that
to the anomaly. Everyone's calling it a solar flare. No one is that dumb and would call it a solar flare. Like, NASA scientists are smarter enough to say that a solar flare comes from the sun. This purple cloud is not coming from the sun, so therefore it is not a solar flare. Like, I think that set the tone for the movie for me and just said, okay, it's already a joke.
Well, I mean, partly, okay, science in the 90s, they might have mistaken it for a solar flare until they actually, you know, got up there and looked, because apparently they didn't have satellites they could turn on it. Maybe they didn't have the Hubble Space Telescope that they could, you know, turn in that direction and see what was going on. I don't know.
Okay. Anybody else got any other thoughts on the episode, on the movie itself?
Yeah, there was one part that truly bothered me is like the, and again, it goes back to writing and the lack of emotion everybody showed when Mystique died. Like, I was expecting Beast to like rage as he ran towards her or scream or do something, but everybody was like in shock. And then at the very end, they named the school Jean Grey, and it's like,
Mystique got like an unmarked grave with some flowers on it.
Yeah, she got a grave in like the ground.
Okay? Shafted.
Yeah, and it just felt so sad that she was the one that was trying to get everybody to see you in one direction, and I felt like she got shafted.
I agree.
Yeah, but at the same time, Jean's actually the one that saved the world by sacrificing herself at the end. So I don't know. I could see both scenarios happening.
But Raven sacrificed herself trying to stop Jean from going berserk all over the world.
Right.
I don't know. It just seemed to me that Raven died in vain.
And it feels like Charles, like, is selfish and, like, did not care about her, even though she loved the guy.
Yeah, we're going to bring this up, and I'm going to bring it up here, because we're talking about our favorite character here in a second anyways. 100% my favorite character in this movie, and normally it's not this kind of a person. I liked Hank in this movie. Because, and here's why I liked Hank. I liked Hank because when nobody else would do it, he called Charles out for his bullcrap. In the middle of the kitchen, it wasn't Beast, it was Hank. Called him out and said, admit you were wrong.
Yeah.
And he couldn't. Mm-hmm. And Hank made the, he said, he's gone. That right there is the kind of thing that does push people into the villain side for sure. But Hank made it to my favorite character just because he called Charles up for his bullcrap.
I don't like Charles Xavier after these movies. Like,
I appreciate that Hank called him out, but he didn't really follow up on it. Like, he left and just went to go see Magneto. Like, why didn't he, you know, continue pushing Xavier or, you know, because the rest of the X-Men on his side?
Because I think maybe he felt like he couldn't get through to Charles, and until Charles was willing to admit that he was wrong, it was useless to talk to him.
And grief makes you do things that might be out of character. Like, Beast in his normal frame of mind might have stayed, but Beast grieving Raven, you know, he's just out of there. He's just gone.
Yeah.
Well, and I think also Hank knows how far he can push Xavier based on what he has seen. I think he has helped him pick himself up. Hank has helped Xavier pick himself up. And he knows that there is only so much he can do before he slips again.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else?
My favorite character is Nightcrawler. I like his scene.
You stole my favorite.
I love Nightcrawler, especially when he gets pissed and starts going. It's like,
that was insane. I was like, they need to do a Nightcrawler movie, and I would not mind if it was kind of like a horror. That would be insane. I would love that.
No. I don't know that it would need to be a horror movie, because Nightcrawler is usually, you know, nicer than that. But
No. Like, just make it. Oh, he's awesome. I love him.
No, Nightcrawler is awesome. He's awesome. He's adorable.
He's blue.
He's blue.
It's part of your blue crew.
Yes. Beast and Nightcrawler, and you know, in the comics, Angel, when after he has his stint as the angel of death. He's also blue for a while. But yeah, I mean, Nightcrawler is one of my favorite mutants, so he's always going to be my favorite. And yeah, Beast as well. I love Beast.
That's good. Did you guys have a favorite part of the film that you liked? I know there's a lot of issues, but was there a favorite part of the film?
I mean, a lot of the effects were amazing. I think there was moments that really shined well, like when Xavier is being forced up the stairs and he realizes like how in trouble he is, and he reaches out to Jean and he brings her back. I think that was a really powerful moment in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed Kid Jean a lot. I thought she did a really good job.
Yeah. I really enjoyed getting to see Jean be the Phoenix this time around, and not just how broken she was in Last Stand, and you know, the whole split personality thing. There were a couple of times when they were trying to get to the point of what Charles actually did to help Jean out, where I'm like, yeah. Did you learn nothing? Oh, wait, they reset the timeline. Never mind. Oh, you did learn something. You only, you know, helped her. You only kind of blocked off her grief. You didn't, like, you know, completely, you know, tamp down her powers.
Okay. Yeah.
That's good. I also really like the implication that Jean's not really dead at the end of the movie. Not that we're going to get any more sequels, but, you know, she is the Phoenix, so she does, you know, come back.
She transformed.
Yeah.
I am, by the way, I will say one of my favorite aspects of this film was getting to see Peter Maximoff again, even though he didn't really do much. Yeah. I enjoyed seeing my boy.
He face punched on the ground.
Whew. Yeah. Slow down, kids. Safety first.
Yeah.
Another criticism I had about the movie was Jean's dad.
What a douche.
I mean,
like I said,
for him to turn his back on his daughter like that.
Oh yeah, that totally sucks. And I wish Charles had the opportunity to explain that to Jean better.
Yeah.
Than what he ended up with.
I mean, that guy needed to die.
He did.
He did.
And he did.
Yeah. I don't like what he did. I understand what he did.
Yeah.
Because he realized there was somebody else that could help him. I just not the right way he did it though. He should have done the way he did it.
If he took his daughter to Xavier and said, "I need help," versus "I don't want her," I think that would have made it better in my eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it would have been interesting to just be like, okay, just make her forget me because we'll help her heal. And that's it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
We get the reason why he did not want any contact with her. But
right.
One of my favorite scenes was the space scene. I think that's it was because cool. There was a lot of Nightcrawler in there and I just liked
although
it's worked, but...
Although I did have a slight, you're like, okay, you had Cyclops take out the thruster. Why didn't you get Jean, the telekinetic, to stop the rotation of the shuttle? Like, dude.
I have a question.
Why is she?
I think Jean was still not in 100% control of her power, and she needed to be physically closer. Like she says later.
I have a question. How come Peter Maximoff did not need a helmet or oxygen mask or anything like that?
Because Storm closed all the gaps.
Yeah.
And he's going so fast he doesn't need oxygen at that point.
Okay.
I can just make it up. Don't worry. We're good.
Well, plus they had... Yeah.
Spin belief. It's cool. Yeah, okay. Did y'all have a favorite quote? I know there weren't a lot of funny quotes in the movie. For sure. I'll just say my favorite one was the women are always saving the men around here. You might want to consider changing the name to I'm just kidding. Wow. I couldn't help it, Andrea.
I wish this was a video show so people could see my displeasure.
It was just like as soon as I started reading that quote, Andrew's like looked up. I'm just kidding. I hated that line. But now, I really didn't have a favorite quote. There wasn't anything really that just stuck out to me. Summers telling Magneto he's going to kill him, but dropping an F-bomb.
Yeah.
If he kills or he hurts Jean or kills Jean. Cool.
That was a good line.
That's about it. I mean.
There was a quote I found from it's actually from a deleted scene that I really liked. It's like, we used to think the Earth was the center of our solar system. It was only a few hundred years ago that we found out that the sun was the center. In the grand scheme of the galaxy, there's still so much we don't know about our place in it and what may lie beyond, which is why we need to keep learning, because even though it feels like we're at the end, it's only the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who spoke that line?
I don't remember. I think it might have been Gene, but I'd have to pull up. You had to ask me that right after I closed IMDb.
Failed. All right.
So there is one quote. It's the very beginning where Jean Grey is talking, and she says, "Who are we? Are we simply what others want us to be? Are we destined to a fate beyond our control, or can we evolve and become something more?" And yeah, it goes back into like that whole entire idea of like, are you in control of who you are, or are you going to let other people define you? And I mm-hmm. think that that's something that Jean struggles with. Is she a monster, or is she something more?
Mm-hmm. I will say, for as much criticism as we have for this movie, she did a phenomenal job. The actor, I can't remember her name now, a phenomenal job at playing Jean, playing somebody who was dealing with some. And you know, we know she studied mental illnesses before she did this film, but she did a great job showing somebody who was struggling internally with this. So I appreciated her acting. I thought she did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking about Jean, I think we see a very quick turn from when she finds out the truth for like just betraying everything that she knows and loves and going to see Magneto, and then going even further down the rabbit hole. Like, I kind of want to see a little bit more progression there.
Yeah.
They could have made the movie another extra, half hour maybe, and that may have helped.
But it may have solved a lot of the issues of this movie.
Maybe.
Yeah. All right, Andrea, do we have any plot holes in this film?
All right, there's actually not that many of them. So, anachronisms. At the end of the movie, Charles is seen wearing a modern 2007 plus Rolex Milagos. Maybe he took it. Maybe Logan gave it to him. He was like, hey, look, this was mine when I went back.
Except Logan just went back into his, past self's body. So, yeah. So having a watch from 2007 to 1992, probably not good.
Maybe he was the one that created the Rolex.
Oh, maybe.
All right. Revealing mistakes. Jean's and Nightcrawler's mutant abilities do not allow them to survive space. That's true. The X-Men save astronauts who are wearing protective suits while wearing leather jackets. Yep. I agree with that one.
No, we already solved that one.
Yeah.
Factual errors. The damaged shuttle is spinning because the thruster is firing. When this is destroyed, it slows down to a halt almost instantly. In the vacuum of space, this would not happen. It would remain spinning fast while decelerating slowly due to the opposing thrusters firing. Conservation of angular momentum in action. I did notice this, and I thought it was just way too convenient for them to just be like, shoot a laser and let's stop it. But
yeah, mm-hmm. again, why wasn't Jean using her telekinesis to slow mm-hmm. the spin of the shuttle?
I think that would have solved that particular physical issue. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then finally, incorrectly regarded as goofs, the film is set in 1992, 30 years after the events of X-Men First Class. Yet the characters have barely aged during the intervening years. A few mutants have anti-aging abilities, but not all of them. This movie is set in an alternate timeline, so all continuity errors are justified.
When something else doesn't make sense, just reset the timeline.
Exactly.
Marvel will do it eventually. Just watch. Oh, all right, Fred. What does Rotten Tomatoes say?
All right, we got two here. Outgunned on the action front by box office rivals and two nerves to tell a more intimate story, Dark Phoenix leaves the franchise running on empty.
Aww.
Kind of like an alternator going at 70,000K.
Too soon.
It's not that the Dark Phoenix is a complete disaster. It's that the franchise hasn't changed much in the last 20 years, while the rest of the superhero genre has continued to grow and evolve.
Nice. All right, time for our movie ratings. We have three movie style ratings.
That last was a low blow, guys.
That was not like, me.
I'm sorry.
All right, I need to bring up the spreadsheet and do this before we do the rating.
1 out of 10 split trees. 1 out of 10 women choking each other for the win. that was a good one. Oh, I was trying to think of something funny, but I couldn't think of something else funny. Oh. Anyways.
1 out of 10 daddy issues.
One out of ten, we still don't know what storyline we're supposed to be following. All right, so 1 out of 10. Carrie, do you have your rating?
I am gonna give this a 4. I would watch this again if it was on. It's not completely terrible. It's not as good as Apocalypse, which is, you know, saying something, because although I didn't hate Apocalypse either, so yeah. So a 4 to me is still watchable, but not, you know, not something I would, you know, gravitate towards if I really needed to watch an X-Men movie.
Okay. What about you, Andrea?
I'm going to give this movie a 4.5 out of 10 daddy issues, because I like the action. I enjoyed those moments. If they would have just stopped talking and I would have just gotten the action, it would have been fantastic. It's really interesting because all the X-Men First Class and then X-Men Apocalypse, they all fall into 4.5. So I think that will just keep it in the family.
And Fred, what about you, man?
So I'm looking across my numbers here. Like, okay, X-Men First Class, I gave it a 6.5. And then X-Men Apocalypse, I gave that one a 5 even. If I look at 4.5, we're going down to the level of Elektra, Spider-Man 3, Hancock, and Chronicle. I don't think it's that bad. So I think I'm going to have to put it in line with Apocalypse at an even 5.0. What do we got? 5 out of 10 women choking each other for the win.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Let's see, and I'm looking at it. I gave X-Men Apocalypse, for some reason, I gave it 4.5, but after watching this movie, that one really ought to go higher up on the scale. but I can't give it higher than X-Men Apocalypse. I can't. There are certain movies that I have given very, very low scores to. See, The Shadow and The Phantom are 2.
Yeah.
And we know. And I think I gave Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance a 1. I don't know why I did that. It wasn't that great anyways. Oh, and The Spirit. But I think this one, I can't give it anything higher than 4.5, so I'm going to settle on a 3.5 for this one. It had some good moments, but overall it wasn't the greatest thing since sliced bread. It had some issues. So maybe if they had some men saving the day more, it'd be better.
Boom.
you did not. Wow.
Hey, Logan. There we go. That's the man we need.
We need a shirtless Logan is what we need.
We really did.
So, All right, I'm gonna do that, but I'm gonna do 3.5. Women choke each other for the win on this one.
Mike is truly on dangerous ground here, guys.
Bill, I am so tired. You don't even know the half of it. All right, our next movie, Carrie, is what?
We are going to be watching Fantastic Four from 2015. This is the Josh Trank Fantastic Four, which I also don't understand why I'm supposed to hate, but, you know.
Have y'all seen this one too?
Nope.
I don't remember.
Doesn't it have Michael B. Jordan in this one too?
Yeah.
I watched snippets of it. My parents put it on, but I fell asleep. That's what happened.
That says a lot.
But now that Michael B. Jordan is in there, I'm just going to stay up and just watch it.
I don't know if he's shirtless or not, Andrew. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So
this guy's so stony.
Wow.
So,
he's shirtless.
So the reason we're watching this one is because what we decided to do is we're either going to watch a movie series to keep the timeline or a portion of the MCU because there's so many freaking films up to an Avengers. But between there, we're going to take a break and watch like an independent film that has nothing correlating to it. So there's this one, and then we're going to watch after Fantastic Four, we're going to go back and watch a couple parts of the MCU timeline.
We're gonna finish out what is it, phase two or phase three?
I think it's phase two because it goes all the way to Age of Ultron.
Okay,
so
yeah.
So we're gonna watch the last couple movies before we get to Age of Ultron. So, anyways, with all being said, next time Fantastic Four 2015. All right, Andrea.
All right. So we want to hear from you. You can reach us at capechronicles@randomchatter.com. If you liked the movie, if you did not, if you agreed or disagreed with us, send us that email. If you're not an email kind of person, you can also Twitter us. I'm so funny. At Random Chatter. You can also follow Cape Chronicles at Cape Chronicles. You can find me on Twitter at Katzbears. That's KATZBEARZ. Fred, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at FreddyWonKenobi. That's FreddyWon Kenobi.
Carrie, where can they find you?
You can find me at CarrieBlackfire42. That's KERIBlackfire42.
And Mike is not about the Twitter, but you can find him on the Random Chatter Discord. You can also find many of our shows, including this one, at randomchatter.com. We don't just talk about superheroes. We talk about much, much more. You can spread the word and support us. You can also leave reviews on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. We will read it all on air. Finally, the music that you hear in this podcast is High Roller Mojo by Blue Stolly, as silly as the sentence sounds. All trademarks are owned by their respective owners.
Don't get burnt.
Phoenix, ow.
Don't faceplant.
You know what? If it wasn't because of Carrie and I, this would not work. Okay.
Wow. Thank you, Earl Power. There we go. There we go.
Wow. All right. Peace out, everybody.
Bye. Bye.